G-16, Central Plaza, New Birchwood, New Kerguelen. With the future of any further contact between Earth and New Kerguelen balancing on a knife edge like never before, Dan McCarthy was all but ready to tear his hair out. The prospect of his daughter Piper having anything close to a normal life rested upon which way the balance tipped, as Dan knew only too well given the recurring Earth-based hysteria towards anything telepathy-related, which certain sectors of the media loved whipping up, and which certain sectors of the population were somewhat understandably susceptible to buying into. Dan's fear and urgency came from an obvious place of parental love and the undying urge to protect his child, but his frustration was more complex. It wasn't the messenger's fault that they couldn't understand what seemed to him like basic arguments, or even follow rudimentary logic. He knew this would have sounded patronizing if he'd shared the thought with anyone else, but it was an unshakable truth. The blame lay with the manner in which the architects, via the machines they presented as elders, had encouraged the messengers to educate and raise successive generations to stunt their intellectual reasoning abilities almost beyond belief. The sole exceptions were perhaps Leisha and Sacco, the hereditarily chosen interpreters who had been raised for the task of relaying complex information from the machines in a way New Kerguelen's deliberately uneducated masses could understand.
"Tell them about Piper,"
Tara whispered, very suddenly but very surely.
"Logic failed. Appeal to emotion."
With quite literally nothing to lose, bearing in mind what would happen if the gate to Earth was destroyed and neither Leisha nor Sacco were ever able to return, Dan nodded uneasily. "My daughter needs help for a condition we can't cure on Earth," he announced. "Leisha and Sacco have been kind in trying to help us, but I'm hoping something or someone else here can help us with it." In agreeing to mention this at all, Dan was leaning into a sense of decency he had always got from the messengers. Since the days of Il Diavolo and beyond, and not always finding similar confidence among his closest friends and family, Dan had felt that Leisha and Sacco were inherently and undeniably good, despite the manipulative influence of their elders, which he now knew to have been controlled by the distant architects. He hoped their decency and goodness would extend to the general population of New Kerguelen, and was counting on this now like he had never counted on anything before. "I wanted to cooperate with your planet long before my daughter's problems became apparent," he hastened to add. "But now I need to. Please, on top of everything else I've said today, bear this in mind. We can help each other in so many ways, and there may be future challenges in store which the population of each planet could assist the other in solving. Closing the door by destroying the gate could cause us and you unnecessary problems in the future, and it would cause my daughter terrible problems for the rest of her life."
"Piper is my sister's baby,"
Tara stepped in, not missing a beat as Dan stopped talking.
"My niece, she's the sweetest thing."
Pausing to look around for any children, like those she had seen innocently frolicking around in a life-affirming moment during her first visit to New Kerguelen, Tara quickly spotted two adult messengers standing at the very front of the crowd with an impossibly cute child huddled against their knees. Tara focused on this family. She assumed they were a family entirely correctly and smiled warmly at the child. She then looked up to its parents.
"Dan is right about everything else, too," she said, directly addressing them. "There is nothing to fear from the gate."
"We have a child, too,"
one of the parents shot back. Quite why this telepathic voice in Tara's mind was so clear when every other was suppressed, she didn't know. It was likewise a mystery as to quite how she knew the voice to be of the mother rather than the father, but this was abundantly clear.
"Is the child you speak of forced to live under an infernal gate?"
the mother continued.
"The gate is safe,"
Tara yelled back, more surprised by how this had gone than she'd ever been by anything else in her life. The mother held Tara's eyes. With words that reached the entire crowd at once, telepathy as experienced in large groups was based on the focusing of attention in ways the humans would never have been able to understand, even if the messengers themselves had been in any position to explain, she then changed the direction of the day in a sudden and painful instant.
"Okay, prove it." Tara felt her chest closing in on her, and she wasn't the only one.
Prove it,
the insistent mother continued.
Pass the gate and come back. Don't tell us how safe it is. Show us.
Thousands upon thousands of arms shot into the air, signaling approval for the suggestion. With their evident strength of feeling and the increased dynamism of the crowd's movements, Dan was suddenly very glad Sacco had put some precautionary force fields in place. Tara now felt very much as though she had stirred up a hornet's nest that could sting the life out of her visiting trio, or that, in engaging what she had thought would be an emotionally receptive target for the Piper-based argument in favor of continued interplanetary contact, she had unknowingly stepped on a tiger's tail.
You shot down three guys who were trying to cross the gate,
Dan roared, throwing his own hands up in agitation as he gazed down at the squadron.
Now you support sending us? If the gate is a threat, the gate is a threat whoever crosses it.
None of the squadron leaders spoke for a few seconds, and they were all so indistinguishable that Dan couldn't remember which ones had spoken so far.
They failed to respect the hierarchy, one eventually said. We have never been set against a preemptive response to the gate's discovery.
Dan inhaled slowly through his nose. He wanted to say something about letting sleeping dogs lie, but an echo of Emma's voice dissuaded him from doing so. Not merely acknowledging, but introducing the possibility that what he was arguing against might be true, that the architects might pose a gate-based threat, even only if provoked, would be decidedly unwise when the stakes were this high. In the stormy days of the IDA leak, which Dan had until now never thought he'd look back on as a relative walk in the park, Emma had incessantly warned him that saying anything like, even if I was lying about one thing, in any context was a bad idea, which would lead to headlines he didn't want. This time, when the damage would be a lot worse than negative media attention, and more importantly, when it would be utterly irreversible, introducing doubt didn't make any kind of sense. Especially speaking to these guys, Dan reflected, factoring in their apparent blindness to reason.
And our collective view now, the squadron member continued, is that if you are as confident as you say you are, you will cross the gate. Your kind has helped us to discover great truths and great lies, and we acknowledge that. But the status quo of living fearfully divided under this wretched gate is not one we can endure. Your choice is a simple one. Return to Earth before both gates will be destroyed, or prove the gate poses no threat by venturing through it and returning unscathed.
Countless arms shot up once more, supporting this statement. Dan shook his head in disbelief.
How does that make any kind of sense? You either think the gate is a threat or it's not. Why would you let me decide on which of these opposite choices your world should take? You must have some faith in our opinions to even offer the choice, so why won't you listen when I tell you there's no threat?
If you have sufficient faith in your own opinion of the gate's harmlessness that you are willing to cross it, so do we, the alien replied. But until you actually go, your faith will not be apparent. I should not have to tell you that a statement of faith has nothing on a leap of faith.
Moving more frantically than ever before, thousands of alien arms danced in the air. The people had spoken, and Dan McCarthy didn't like the message.
This is the wrong way to go, Sacco said, stepping forward to address the crowd. But I acknowledge the collective strength of feeling. When Leisha returns, we will discuss it further.
The three humans, including the unusually quiet Billy Kendrick, shared shocked glances. What was there to discuss, they all wondered. The very suggestion was plainly insane. But until Leisha does return and until a decision is reached with his consent, I ask you all to return to your dwellings or disperse to other communal areas, Sacco continued. Staring in the direction of the gate and arguing with each other will bring nothing good our way. These architects lied to us for generations. Please do not let them continue to defeat our emotions, even in their absence. More slowly, as if akin to a polite applause rather than the rapturous ovation the squadron commanders had earned,
Thousands of raised arms swayed back and forth at the end of Sacco's comment. It was as though everyone had paused at the highest point of a Mexican wave, Tara thought, taking this briefest moment of humorous respite where she could find it. Then, with a far more human-like wave of his hand, Sacco dismissed the crowd and was glad to see them begin to disperse immediately. Dan, after wondering for a second why the crowd had been gathered so intently in the plaza before he arrived and realizing it was seemingly the only open space they could gather to debate or demonstrate about anything, looked at Sacco with an expression of disappointment.
"What the hell was that?" he lamented. "What are we supposed to do now?"
"That was buying time," Sacco sighed. "But as for what we do with it..." The silence that followed indicated that no punchline was coming. Sacco simply didn't know.
"Do we just wait for Leisha?" Tara asked. "Can't you call him?"
"I can sense that he is still very busy," Sacco said. "Understandably so, given our explicit plan to divide our attention into groups, but..." Sacco stopped talking very suddenly, his attention taken by a lone figure who appeared to be knocking on the force field. Recognizing him, Sacco dismantled the invisible barrier he had momentarily forgotten all about, then indifferently called the alien forward. "Hello," the individual said, his words heard by the humans thanks to the patch that he, like so many others, had only recently been granted. He wore a striking magenta tunic. "I am New Kerguelen's planetary historian, Boone. There are some things I would like you to see, in light of what was just agreed."
"Nothing was agreed," Dan said. "We didn't agree to anything."
Boone's eyes flitted between Dan and Sacco. "Sacco," he went on, "due to long-standing caste divisions and particularly due to your closeness with the machines, I have so far opted not to show you and Leisha the discoveries I have made since New Birchwood was rediscovered. But today, with our human friends so close to such a momentous decision..." "I don't care," Sacco interjected, his words indicating quite plainly that there was a history between New Kerguelen's interpreters and its sole planetary historian. Boone's mention of long-standing divisions had already hinted at this, but Sacco's tone underlined it. "I'm going to spend the time until Leisha returns trying to reason with the squadron. Dan, to be candid, I believe it might be better if you stay away for now, at least until Leisha returns." Dan nodded, struggling to disagree.
"I'll take a look at what Boone wants to show us."
"Okay," Sacco said. "And Dan, I'll do whatever I can. This isn't over." Dan smiled at his alien friend, his second best alien friend, as everyone knew, but a good one nonetheless.
"Good luck,"
Tara called as Sacco set off. "You too," he replied without turning around. "So," Billy Kendrick said, breaking a long period of personal silence.
"What have you found, Boone? This place must be overflowing with hidden artifacts and knowledge."
Boone didn't smile or nod. The humans didn't think he would know how, since Leisha and Sacco had seemingly learned such gestures from them, but his eyes did widen. "Follow me to the Hall of Memories," he said, ushering the humans towards a busy outdoor walkway as the crowd continued to disperse. Despite the lack of a force field and without quite knowing why, Dan no longer felt unsafe. Everyone who walked past seemed warm somehow, as though they wanted him to help them and didn't realize they were pushing him into an impossible situation.
"Hall of Memories," Billy echoed, his giddiness growing. "Dan, did you hear that? Ancient knowledge, and not from those bastard architects, from the messenger's ancestors before they even got here."
To this, Boone said nothing. They walked for less than a minute before he stopped at a nondescript doorway, which was most remarkable in just how much like an earthly doorway it looked.
"Here we are," he announced.
"Before we go in," Tara said, "I just have one question."
The planetary historian held his hand a few inches from the door.
"Go on."
"Okay. Is your name really Boone?"
"It is."
That's gotta be a sign we'll find something helpful, she said, addressing this comment to her human companions.
Billy Kendrick stifled a chuckle as Boone pushed open the door to lead them inside.
Hopefully so, Tara. Hopefully so.